This is the moment many wait for.
The most entertaining.
Man of wisdom. Man of experience, Dave.
The most informative.
To bring light to a dark subject. To bring positivity to a negative world.
The incredible Paul Moyer.
Moyer out.
He's incredible, Dave.
The incredible Paul Moyer.
Dave. He is with us each and every week. We love the conversations we have with this man who's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline and did a great job on the draft with us, the one, the only Paul Moyer. How are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic, and thanks for having me.
It's always good to talk to you. Now that now that the draft is in the rearview mirror, you were there with us for a day, and we were breaking down all of the action and what was happening and everything, and you've had a chance to, I don't know if you look at draft grades. I always think those are kind of fun just to see how people feel about each team and how they did. But if Paul Moyer were handing out a draft grade to the Seattle Seahawks, what would you give them?
Well, I think we got the best defensive player in the draft, and he is going to be we'd probably have to go back to Cortez Kennedy to get a guy with that kind of ability. He's got a little bit of Brandon Mebane in him, I guess, from a shake standpoint, but I think he has potential to be better against the run. I think he makes us so much better. It's an A. Just staying with it. Because I think John, I know John got a ton of offers to move back on that. But I don't need a lot of good football players. I think we got
Seattle Sports.
I think we got a whole bunch of good football players. But we need some Pro Bowl, big-time players on defense. And I think that alone. The more I watch Hayes, I like him. I think he's going to compete. I think we both the tackle guards that we got are going to push for playing time. So I think our front line now and the offensive line is young and good and a lot of competition there. So it's hard for me because there's a couple of them I were head scratchers for me. But I gotta watch more film and to really feel good about some of our fourth round picks. But yeah, I give an A like I've seen most of the mock or the post draft gurus out there.
Yeah, you know, Paul, we were just talking about this, that most of the criticism that people were hearing from are those fourth round picks, which I guess that's a good thing, right? Rather than the first and second round pick, which they didn't have, but. You know, everybody universally seemed to like the first two picks, but yeah. What about? Well, let's start with Tyrese Knight. What did you see from him? One thing I did was I compared his stats to what Bobby did when he was at Utah State, and I just remember looking at Bobby. And I'm not trying to compare him to him, but I just remember he would like sit there for a second when the ball snapped. That was a very distinct characteristic about him at Utah State, but you know, the ball would snap and he would just freeze and then he would move, and I thought that was kind of odd, but again, I'm not trying to compare him to that, but yeah, I was just looking at some of his numbers and they kind of stacked up. But where do you think Knight is sort of lacking?
Yeah, I heard Nagy on this morning talk about him, and he's much higher on him than I am. And I'm not going to try to be negative here. You know, they see something in him, and maybe as a will linebacker and in coverage, there's more to that. He does flash at times, but I've been in that part where I needed a safety, and he was pretty good. He had some attributes I liked when I was coaching. But I'll never forget when Phil Neri one time said to me, he was one of our scouts at the time with the Seahawks. And I said, yeah, he's got a pretty good chance of making the team. He goes, Paul, he has a chance of making the team. And I said, yeah, that's a fair assessment of that. And it made me think moving forward, when I'm drafting somebody in certain rounds, it can't be they have a chance to make it. They have to make it. They have to be a no-brainer. And with Trice, look, he doesn't run fast enough for me. He's not in a Bobby Wagner point at all. Matter of fact, if you go into the combine, he was weighing 225 pounds, and he did that probably to run a faster 40. And then when you go to his pro day, he's weighing 235 pounds, but he doesn't run the 40. He doesn't do any of the cone drills, right? He's, you know, so, you know, he was playing that part, and a lot of the guys do. He flashes at times. I get it. But he's, to me, he's a 4'6", 4'6" plus linebacker that's not slow, but it's not 4'5", 4'4", probably like Bobby Wagner was, who is, a freak of nature strength-wise when he was coming out of Utah State. So when he did freeze, he had so much speed and strength, he could get away with that. This guy can't. So I think, look, they're really going to have to coach him up on being consistent. And, I heard them say he's really instinctive and he reads things well. I didn't see that. He's instinctive at times, and there's times he sees a guard pull and he'll knife through it. He'll read it just right. But I don't see it consistent enough. It doesn't mean I think he's a bad football player. I don't want anybody to think that. But there were some guys in the fourth round that was a no-brainer to me. No-brainer. And I'm not saying any linebackers. I mean, I love the kid from Washington State, Hicks. He was 215 pounds. I think you could have played him kind of at a will linebacker. So when I lose guys like that that I fall in love with, I go, man, this guy better be special. And, time will play. We'll tell. And that's really my only issue in the draft, is I just thought there were better football players that we could have picked in the fourth round and still gotten him probably, I think, in the sixth round. But, maybe other people loved him too.
Well, Paul, I'll say this, that you're not alone in your criticism of the fourth round picks, because Dave and I were talking about, looking at all these post-draft grades and, who everybody loved, who people had a problem with. And it seemed like if there was a consistent element of negativity at all directed at the Seahawks, which they got high marks from just about everybody, if there was criticism, it was directed at Tyrese Knight and A.J. Barner. Both fourth round picks were guys that, just in reading the draft, Nick, saying, hey, we think these guys could have been available later. It was kind of a reach. But when you talk about, hey, there's certain rounds where you look at a player and say, they better make the rod. They should make that team. Where's the cutoff? Is it fifth round, fourth round? Do you look at a fifth rounder as like, he's 50-50 to make the team? Where's your cutoff for, you're drafted in this round, you make the team?
Yeah, and I want to talk about Barner in a second, too. But the answer to your question is, look, your top four, not only should they make the team, they should be pushing for playing time in the top four rounds. I do. The guys are so good now, and this game is so young. I just heard a lot of teams not picking up fifth-year options on these first-round draft picks. Man, it's hard to get there. So you got to come in and play early. You can't, this guys in their 30s nowadays, it's like you might as well be a 60-year-old golfer. So you've got to make, I guess I'm talking about myself, but professionally. And so you've got to make hay early on while they're on those young contracts. And so those first four rounds, not only they got to have special attributes, they've got to be special football players. And so, look, I'm going to say this, though, about Barner, because I really think I see things, and one of my strengths is seeing talent, and I see it quickly when I watch a film. I don't need to watch nine games. I think I'm about 90% right watching a half a game or a full game. A guy may be injured or maybe a tough matchup, and so I got to go quantify that with more film. I think Barner has a chance to be a really good football player for us. I think the reason why he's knocked down so much is because everybody puts them in the category of a guy like Noah Fant. Oh, he's got to run 4.55, and he's got to be a wide receiver today. No, you don't. And there's not a lot of Travis Kelce's out there. You've got to be whatever it is at tight end, you've got to be really good at it. He will be our best blocking tight end. He is a man. He is nasty. And I think he's more than capable as a wide receiver. So now I'm looking at a guy like him going, will he be there? We don't have a fifth-round pick. Well, maybe we end up getting one. But, is he going to be there in the fifth? Will he last to the sixth? Or sometimes you go, for what he can do for our team and the kind of football we want to play, I want him. But the first pick in the fourth round for us, was Knight. And again, I think he's going to be a good special teamer. I don't think he's going to be a bad football player. I just don't see him pushing the start. And as a fourth rounder, that's disappointing, because I think there were some other guys that I fell in love with. And I don't usually really push hard. John, you know, Schneck to me has done such a good job. I've always loved that they've gone after good football players early on in the draft. I just thought this one was maybe a need pick and instead of best football player available pick.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. We were just, you know, giving out the grades and things like that. And, you know, we did a take two story on the Cowboys didn't exercise the fifth year option on quarterback Trey Lance. Was he the third pick in the draft? I think
they, and they traded up for him.
Yeah. And and they gave up a couple of number ones. And, you know, it's just amazing to me, Paul. I think putting it in perspective of how you can entirely get something wrong, because he looked as, I mean, look at what the 49ers have done, and John Lynch, they've done an incredible job trading and, acquiring talent and getting the right guys on their team, and even, you know, the seventh round pick of Brock Purdy, and they blew that one so bad. Like, this is maybe, like, one of the most costly, you know, you might put it up there with, like, the Russell Wilson trade. I mean, it's as far as a miss, it's unbelievable that the 49ers, with pretty much the same staff that they have now, decided to pick Trey Lance and sacrifice all that draft option for them, you know, or I should say draft power that they had. And it's just amazing to me that they didn't get that one right. Kind of puts it in perspective anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And I think everybody understood the athletic ability of Trey Lance. I mean, when he's on the field, the way he moves, things are really effortless. But he was so young. He had played very little football. And so you're projecting on a quarterback. I mean, you're really projecting out 3 years. And, it could have played out. I mean, to that, does it matter if it was Trey Lance or Brock Purdy? You know, they got their quarterback eventually, and they draft well. I mean, how about Carolina Panthers last year? Why would you trade up all the way to get the number one pick when you weren't even sure yet at what quarterback, other than we're going to go through all this due diligence and we're going to find the best quarterback, only to now not have the opportunity to get a potential generational player like Caleb Williams? It's not an exact science, and I don't think I know everything. I miss out on guys all the time, but there's some that I just know, man. It's that we talk about the book Blink all the time, Dave. You know, your first impression that you know what's going to happen by body language and just watching a little film. You know, there's just one or two guys in this draft where I went, I'm not seeing that. And I'm usually, I think, right on those.
The other thing about Blank, Paul, is you've definitely put your 10,000 hours in. That was you're an expert if you put 10,000 hours. Paul, you probably put in, 50,000 hours? Is that about right?
I don't. You know what? When you love something, Dave, you don't count the hours.
Just like being on this show, right?
Absolutely.
Paul, we're going to have John Schneider and Mike McDonald at 4 o'clock. What do you want to hear from them? What haven't we heard to this point that you're curious about?
I think one would be how much, you know, picking particularly, guys, I don't have a sheet in front of me, unfortunately. Our first round draft pick is Byron Murphy. Yeah. Thank you. The third, I got that down.
There you go.
How much a grub and them had an influence on that pick? How did they game plan against him going into that Texas game? Because he's doubled so much. Because he was double teamed so often. You know, you would think a guy with that kind of talent would have had more sacks. But, I mean, he's a toy. He's literally doubled almost every play. And so I'm just curious, and how do you evaluate that? How do you evaluate, look, University of Texas El Paso was a bad football team. They're bad. And I don't know how bad they were up front. I was watching night more than I was watching up front. You know, do you see a guy like him when maybe the defensive line occupies the offensive line? Is he that guy that you, because he is a pretty good tackler, that he will excel more in the NFL than he did possibly at college? Because to me, he was a gatherer of tackles, Dave, very similar to Bobby Wagner. Yeah. He made a lot of tackles, but I didn't see a lot of impactful tackles. I didn't see that much in coverage, but the times I saw, he looked like he could cover. What are they, you know, what are they forecasting that, you know, weak side will linebacker him covering tight ends, running backs, you know, other than just making tackles, what are some other skill sets he may have? And yeah, I mean, I got a lot of questions. If you want me to run down there real quick, I can help.
I think we can figure it out. Just curious if there was like a burning question, like, man, I've always wanted to know, or this has been on my mind, because we, you know, we've talked to John every week leading up to the draft, and we'll put a cap on the draft with this conversation today. But it'll be interesting to have him in here with Mike McDonald and just, you know, seeing McDonald for the first time for Dave and I anyway.
Yeah, I one question I'd have for John is, you know, whenever you change roles, and I look a little bit at my business, you know, I became a president of a company. Well, my role changed, you know, and what I had my hands in, you know, whether it's with more clients, am I running, you know, the future of our business, more operational things. With the role he's had now, did he become more hands-on? Did he delegate more this year? Because it sounded like he didn't go out and maybe travel as much, relied on the scouts a lot more, just because of time. You've got a new head coach that just came in who probably wanted to just get into the X's and O's, and he's working on a staff. Did John have to take on more responsibility with the media? Just his time. I'm just more curious of, and you know, John probably said, nah, nothing really changed, still doing the same thing. But something changed because he's now the guy. And whenever you're the guy, you implement something that you may not have wanted to, or you have the opportunity to do now. So, you know, it's too long of a question there, but you guys reframe that for me.
Okay. Hey, by the way, just on the Trey Lance trade, because I couldn't remember the total number, it was three first round. They swapped first rounders. So the 49ers were at 12. They traded with the Dolphins up to 3. So they swapped those two first round picks. Then they got two more first round picks and a third round pick. Just to move from 12 to 3 to get Trey Lance, they gave up two additional first round picks in addition to the 12th that year and a third rounder.
Yeah, it's one of the worst. The Carolina one has a chance to be one of the worst. So we'll see. I mean, can't throw him out yet after just 1 year, but what they passed up is crazy. Obviously the Russell Wilson one, but that's post-draft type of trade. I mean, the Herschel Walker one, not the Herschel Walker, the one New Orleans did.
Traded the whole draft for Ricky Williams.
For Ricky Williams. I mean, that's obviously one of the worst ones too. So they're out there, but quarterbacks, you know, I get when people do it, it's just they rarely play out.
Yeah. Well, Paul, we got like 3 minutes left, and we didn't even talk any Mariner baseball. How are you feeling about – I feel pretty good about the lineup. We're putting – does it go Kirby, Logan, and then –
Miller.
Bryce?
Yeah.
Yeah, so feel pretty good, but I don't know. I'm a little nervous about this one. What do you think about their series in Houston?
Yeah, you remember when we went to go and play the Rangers, and it was – I think it was a show before they played them, and I said, you know, the Mariners, I just felt – that they were going to do something special because they were playing better. They were in the hunt and they were going to Texas. And I just felt like, oh, this is it. Right. And it kind of played out. They won 2 out of 3 during that. Houston makes me nervous because they've got a pretty good rotation the first two games against us as well. I mean, these are good pitching matchups and they have to win this series, Houston. They have to. I know it's early and, you know, we've got, you know, whatever, 4/5 of the season left, roughly. But if they lose 2 out of 3 or get swept by the Mariners, who are in first place, they're done. They're toast. I mean, they'll be 9 games back. So I just worry about, you know, are we as prepared, fired up? You know, this is a playoff series. To me, it is, man. You get a chance to knock Houston out before June. I mean, and yeah, I'm a little worried just because Houston's played a little better, you know, getting a little bit healthier. But I still like what we're doing. I really do. And hitting, you know, whatever it is, just find a way to score one more run than the other guys.
Yeah, I was telling Dave earlier when we were talking about this that despite where Houston is record-wise, despite the injuries and the guys that are underperforming, I still, they've always been a problem, Paul. When this team was losing over 100 games a season, the Astros were a problem for the Mariners. It's like the Rams for the Seahawks. When the Rams were bad, they were still always just a pain in the backside of the Seahawks for whatever reason, and that's how I view the Astros. So their record, to me, I enjoy it. I love their suffering, but I still go into the same – I still go in with the same level of, okay, here we go. I don't feel any better about the series or more confident. I feel like they could be a problem just as easily.
Yeah, their pitching the first two games matches ours, and their first six, seven hitters are still very dangerous. Our hitting is still, it's just, you know, it's inconsistent at best. I wish we had JP, everybody was hitting at all cylinders. You know, I mean, Julio, why he has his days, you know, the inconsistency there. I mean, you know, Raleigh's got to get back. So we're probably not playing our best. We're finding ways to win, but not playing our best going into the series. But I don't know, man. There's just something about this team and Service, the way he gets them prepared. We're going to be competitive, and, you know, hopefully we find a way to win the series.
Paul, is always a pleasure, and let's hope we're talking next week about what a wonderful series it was in Houston. How about that? We're talking about a sixth series win in a row. Let's shoot for that.
I love it, and I will definitely be listening on 4 o'clock with Schneider and McDonald. Don't tell him I said anything about the fourth round pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go all in on that one. Hey, so we got this guy. He's been doing pre and post for like 30 years. And no, we won't do that.
I love them all, and hopefully I'm proven wrong. Nothing make me happier.
Yep, yep.
Well, I'm going to have to call BS on that one.
No, trust me. I hope I'm wrong on that. I really do.
Paul. We appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go. There's Paul Moyer with us each and every week. Always a fun conversation with him. If you tuned in the middle of that or you missed it, it will be on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab and click on our picture, and everything you missed is waiting there for you after the show each and every day. Click subscribe. That way you never have to worry about it again. It just shows up automatically for you.
I hope I'm wrong.
Ha!
No chance.
I always say that. If I predict the Mariners or Seahawks are going to something negative, I'm like, I hope I come in
Monday. You feel bad about it, but you're like, okay.
I'd much rather come and go, I got that one wrong. They won. Yes.
See, that's the difference between you and Moyer. Moyer would rather be right.
He's more satisfaction.
No, I'm
being
kidding.
Right.
I'm kidding.
All right. Speaking of the Mariners, what needs to happen and who needs to improve, more importantly, for this offense to find some success? We'll get into that next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob on Seattle Sports.
Our thanks once again to Paul Moyer, who joined us in the previous segment. As we come to you live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, it's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. And we're now sitting in the dark for some reason. Not sure what.
A little breaker flipped.
Yeah, because
reset the breaker.
If you're watching on the video stream, Dave's in a bit of a spotlight over there. I'm up against the wall in the dark here, and then the media room's kind of dark where Taylor is. So, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on here, but we'll hopefully get that figured out before John Schneider and Mike McDonald, head coach of your Seattle Seahawks, join us at 4 o'clock. They'll join us together, and excited for that. So make sure you stay tuned. We were talking about the Mariners with Paul, who's a massive Mariner fan. Mm-hmm. Again, this team, I feel like what they've done to this point is going to go a long way in helping them down the road, because they're finding ways to win when they're not clicking. They are not clicking offensively. They are in moments. We're seeing it in spots, and it's been timely. We've seen that in years past where guys ultimately look at their numbers at the end of the year and go, ugh, that wasn't a very good year. But you go, well, that guy did have a big hit that won this game, and he had a big hit that won that game. It feels like we're kind of on that road where you're looking at the overall numbers for a majority of these guys going, man, it's not very impressive. Yet they've had some really timely moments very early in this season. And to me, the expectation is the majority of these guys are going to be who they've been in their career. I expect Polanco to be who he's been. He's not there yet. Feels like he's starting to get there. I expect Garver to be who he's been. I don't think these guys all show up and all just fall off the edge of a cliff together. I think it's new guys.
Even though that's happened before.
In a group like this, I just feel like they're pressing. And as the games go on without the success they're used to, they probably press a little more, and it's subconscious, and, you know, they get down in the count. If they're down, it's a, you know, a 0-1 count, 0-2 count, they become very defensive. I just think there's a lot of things that contribute to where they are now. I don't think they all of a sudden just started to stink. I don't think they're, you know, the upper echelon players. They're not the Otanis and the Cody Bellingers and those guys, but even some of those guys that move teams, if you look at some of the acquisitions, are struggling early in the season. You look at guys that didn't move, Aaron Judge struggling early in the season. So it's not unique to the Mariners. We're just seeing it here because we're watching every moment.
Yeah, and Bregman is struggling.
Bregman's, you know, off to a terrible start.
Barely, I mean, over the Mendoza.
Yeah,
mark,
so you're seeing it everywhere. Seeing it everywhere, and you always feel like, yeah, eventually they're going to become who they've been, barring injury. Those guys invariably are going to play somewhere close and sometimes even better than the back of the baseball card.
Well, and so, you know, of the list that we have here, Rojas has really been really good. And
yeah.
I feel like I trust him. He's just such a scrappy player and a heads-up player, too. I mean, you just never see him look confused out there. So, but, yeah, I mean, Julio, obviously, but Garver, Polanco, and then Luke Rayleigh, those are the guys I really want to see come along.
Arias, same
Arias,
thing.
Well, I don't want to see Arias come along because I want Rojas at third base.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, just of the new guys, and even Mitch Haniger has really kind of gone the other direction. He started out hot, and his bat is really cool. We talked about his numbers yesterday, that he was like 3 for his last 32 or
you
something like
that. He said 3 for 32, yeah.
Yeah, with 13 strikeouts, so he needs – we know when he's healthy, he's better than that. And listen, J.P. Crawford, before he got hurt, he was not hitting well. So, yeah, it's up and down the lineup. And we know for a fact these guys are better than that. We know that J.P. is better than that. We know Julio is better than what he's been.
Well, I just hope that these guys, you know, time it up so it's at a point where maybe the pitching isn't getting it done. Right now your pitching is carrying you, but and there's been some offensive outbursts every once in a while, but hopefully, you know, Garver, Julio, Polanco, Luke Rayleigh, those guys, JP, when he's back healthy, you know, come to a point where they're starting to really produce and maybe picks up the, you know, the defensive side or the pitching side, because these guys all have that. And that's the thing that's been frustrating and maybe Mariner fans are a little bit wary of, is the fact that, you know, we've had guys in here that haven't hit up to their baseball card in the last couple of years, really. And, you know, like last year with Teo, all the strikeouts, but none of the power, not none, but a very limited amount.
Yeah.
So hopefully those guys start to come around. But like you said, I mean, it's all over the league. We were talking about Bregman, and you know, that's a really good hitter, as much as we don't want to talk about him, because he's probably the one punk that most embodies what the Houston Astros are about.
Yeah.
But he is struggling as well.
Cal Raleigh talked about this, about the ups and downs and just the need to find more consistency on the offensive side.
You know, we feel it. We're still getting, you know, comfortable and trying to, you know, it's still early on. It's only a month into the season. You know, there's definitely been some ups. There's been some downs. But, you know, we got to double down on staying with it, staying with our approach, staying stubborn. And I think you've seen some games where we've done a really good job of it. And there's been some games where we haven't done such so good a job of it. So, like I said, it's just been a little inconsistent so far.
Yeah, and that's been the – I don't think anybody – well, yeah, some are doubting the cap. You know, I was going to say nobody's doubting that they're capable. Some are. And I guess that would be my question for even the biggest cynics that we have listening. Text in 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Is this a playoff team if the guys in that lineup are hitting at least to the back of the baseball card, to who they've been? Not exceeding. They don't have to go above and beyond. Let's just say that Polanco is – who he's been throughout his career. Garver is who he's been throughout his career, and just keep going down the line. And even the guys that aren't new, J.P. Crawford, Ty France, Cal Raleigh, Julio Rodriguez, if these guys just live up to who they've already been and don't even take that step forward, is this a playoff team? Because I think they are. I think with the pitching the way that it is, what they're doing now where basically nobody is living up to the back of the card, and if you get this lineup to just get there, who they don't have to even grow. Just be who you've been. To me, that's a playoff team.
Oh, it absolutely is, because, you know, you look at the, as you mentioned, the rotation, they're not playing up to the back of their baseball cards. They're exceeding it, basically. So, especially Bryce Miller, what a huge surprise he has been. But, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that. They're 17-14 right now, and they're leading the division. So, and they got a chance here. I mean, look, it's amazing when you look at the Astros, and it's kind of like I feel like there's a trap here or something. This can't be right. They're 10-20. I mean, it's basically the same cast of characters. I think they've had some injuries, but
with the rotation,
offensively, they're the same guys. So yeah, I think it's definitely, I don't think it's too early to say that this is a playoff team. There's lots of people. Didn't JP say he thought they would win the AL West?
Morosi?
Yeah.
I feel like he did.
Yeah.
So he's so optimistic, I'm going to say he did.
There's been a few guys, but anyway, NASA, help us out of the dark here.
we have the crew down here trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah. I think we blew a fuse.
This has got to be a good look.
We're
on the
sitting
stream.
In darkness.
Paul, <Yeah. laughs> you got the spotlight on
people
you.
People are like, Wyman, you never look better.
Well, you got the light on you, so people will be able to see you. But yeah, I don't know what happened here. This is an interesting look, but we'll get it figured out. All right. Meanwhile, talking about baseball, Jeff Passan has an interesting article on the early takeaways from this baseball season so far. We'll get into some of that as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob on Seattle Sports.
Let there be light, Dave. Let
yes,
there be light.
Back on.
We are back in the age of electricity here at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. If you're watching on the video stream, looks much better now. And we'll have head coach Mike McDonald. We'll have John Schneider with us coming up at 4:00. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But just talking about some baseball, Jeff Passan writing an article we were just able to log into right as we were coming back on. So, He talked about some of the observations of the season to this point, and some of which center around the umps. And you were just, what were you just looking at with Angel Hernandez?
Yeah, it was a 3-pitch strikeout that were all three were off the plate, according to, you know, their version of the McDonald's Supermo. No, what's it called?
The EQC tracer. But how did McDonald's get involved?
I don't know, and I don't know how Supermo got in there either. But I mean, you look at the other night, I thought when who's the pitcher for Atlanta? Max Fried was out there just throwing these ridiculous curveballs, and the umpire was getting them right, man. Whoever was umping, and there was probably a couple in there that were off, and you expect that, everyone, especially with that ridiculous breaking pitch coming in. But some of these other ones, man, and yesterday was a good example of how it was for right-hand hitters. It was, you know, outside, high and outside. He was calling those strikes every time, and it was like 6 to 8 inches off the plate.
Horrible. It was horrible.
It was ridiculous.
And I like how in Passan's article here, talking about, so one of his first observation, he says, the month of the ump show and how umpires can flip the narrative. So too many times this season, and to be clear, anything more than zero is too many. An umpire has become the main character in a baseball game. And he says, whether it's Angel Hernandez calling strikes on pitches literally a half foot off the plate, or Hunter Wendelstadt kicking out New York Yankees manager Aaron Boone out of a game because what a fan had yelled,
right.
April's umpiring gaffes had followers clamoring for the days when the robot umpires will arrive in the majors. And yes, robot umpires are inevitable. That's what he's saying. And
I really don't want to see that. But what I do want to see is some of these, I don't know if you want to call them old heads or old school guys that are up there like, I'm the show and I'm in charge. And especially like, just how about a little bit lighter type of mood? You know, it seems like they really feel like they're part of the show. And I'm going to defend NFL officials because they are – that was my experience, and I still see it, that they're not out there trying to be the show. They're trying to be not noticed, basically. And, you know, I had so many times where – you know, and if you talk to me and Blowers, like we're about the same age, some of the comments that he's heard from umpires – now, part of it's baseball tradition, I think, but – for me at that point, those guys back then, even the officials in the NFL, they'd be like, hey, man, I just saw what you did there. You do that again, I'm going to have to flag you for it. Mm-hmm. Helping me out. You know? That's what they're there for. And
kind of giving you a one.
Like, yeah.
I could have thrown a flag. I didn't. I'm letting you know.
Right. I had one time where I was getting held where I was blocking on the field goal, and I got in a fight, and I was screaming and yelling, and then the guy came up to me, and I told him to bleep off and get the hell out of my huddle and this. And then I went over to him, you know, a series later, and I was like, hey, man, I'm sorry. Here's what's going on. He's like, okay, Dave, I'll watch for it. I mean, he knew who I was. And, you know, it was like he was trying to collaborate, trying to work with us. And
yeah.
Whereas the umpires now, especially the guy who calls out Aaron Boone, you know, and throws him out of the game, like, come on, man. That was somebody in the stands. And he was like, I don't care. Well, you should care. That's ridiculous. You're throwing out a manager, and you're wrong. Totally wrong.
And even with robot umps, that element can still exist. The ump is not eliminated.
Yeah, he's still going to be there.
He's going to be right there. Somebody's got to make the calls at the plate, you know, fair or foul, whether a batter was hit by the ball. Every other aspect of the job will still be in that person's purview except for balls and strikes, which in the case of Angel Hernandez is going to be a glorious day. The fact that everybody knows his name and has known it for as long as they have is so damning. He's been bad and consistently bad for so long. And it just feels like each year people become more and more aware of him because it's been such a consistent act. And I always say that the umpires union must be the strongest in all of sports, because I don't ever advocate, you got to fire this guy. This guy should be jobless. I don't want people to be without a job. He should be moved to a different department. He shouldn't be responsible for making those calls because he is clearly not good at it and has not been good at it. And
yeah,
those, he is the biggest catalyst, along with other, like we saw with Lynch yesterday. Those guys are pushing the ball further. They are speeding up the process or the urgency of getting in the robot umps.
Yeah,
you're doing your own disservice there.
That's exactly right. And yeah, Hunter Wendelstedt is the one that threw out Aaron Boone. And
yeah.
I just feel like these old guys that are like, hey, I'm the show. I'm in charge of this whole thing. And then meanwhile, you see it seems like there's a lot of younger guys that are more like, hey, let's work together on this and I'll give you a warning. And what about, you know, maybe just calm down a little bit and don't act like a dictator out there. And that's what I think the older guys do. And that, yeah, like you said, they're doing their occupation a disservice.
Sorry, I was hearing cheering going on in another room next to us.
They just thought what I said was brilliant.
They said that. Did you hear Wyman there?
Yeah.
He nailed. Yeah, I mean, if they are, you know, I'd be curious to talk to those guys. Like, do you want that off your plate? Because you're not losing a job. I think initially people thought you're being replaced.
Right.
No, that element of your responsibility is being replaced. The home plate ump will still exist. Still needs to be there to make the calls we talked about. It's just that element. So I'm wondering, I'd almost think somebody like Hernandez would feel like, good riddance. Let the machine call it. I'm tired of hearing about it. You know, because I'm sure
you'd think, but I'm sure his ego is quite the opposite.
Well, I'm sure he still thinks he's right. Like, oh, let's see what the machine does. You know, like,
yeah.
People have been complaining about the wrong things all these years. All right, you do it. I don't know. I you're probably right. I'm guessing their ego probably. They don't want to be replaced because they're saying we're not doing a good enough job, so they had to take this step. But at the same time, they're not losing a job. They still have responsibility there. I wonder if there's in some of their minds, maybe they wouldn't verbalize it, but maybe there's this element of, good, I'm tired of getting screamed at by both dugouts and hitters up there complaining, and now it'll be on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could see there being a little relief, right?
Yeah, yeah. I would think so, but yeah, I just think it's the mentality. I saw this the other day when I was watching MLB Central, and they were calling it embarrassing, and that was the Wendelstedt one,
yeah,
where he throws out Aaron Boone because somebody screamed from the stands, and you know, and he was like, even though Aaron Boone was telling him that, he was like, I don't care. And that is just a terrible response, and then you know, Angel Hernandez just being very defiant about the whole thing. I mean, they need to get rid of that sort of, because I feel like some of the younger guys that you see out there, they kind of are more like they'll be, I don't know, with the word self-effacing or humble, a little bit more humble maybe. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's what needs to go. It's like an attitude almost with some of the older umpires. And I hate to call out older guys, but that's who's doing it.
They're digging in their heels. So we didn't get to the rest of the article. We got John and Coach McDonald.
Too busy complaining about umpires.
Well, that was number one on his his article. So you guys can check out Jeff Passan's article at ESPN. But number one, he did a list. So he was talking about the umps in number one. His number two observation was about where did it go? I just lost. Oh, new rules are doing what they were intended to do. Talking about speeding up the game. He talked about offense heading in the wrong direction. So it's not just the Mariners he's talking about here. He's talking about the league and the OPS going down and average. He said strikeouts are holding steady is another category. The bad teams are historically bad is another one. And which positive surprise is real? Which disappointment is most doomed? So it's a good article covering a lot of different areas that you guys can check out. But we got to talk some football. We've got the president of football operations and general manager John Schneider and head coach Mike McDonald set to join us in person coming up next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.